Welcome to the Dream Huge Podcast, where we'll talk with real estate investors, entrepreneurs, business leaders, athletes, and more to inspire you with their success stories so you can work hard, never give up, and dream huge. And now, let's start the show.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Dream Huge Podcast. Folks, we love to share success stories from other huge dreamers, influencers, movers, shakers, folks in the real estate business, and more. And hopefully these stories will help to motivate and inspire you to dream huge. And today we are joined with our co-host, Justin Bigelow. What's up, Biggie, the three-time champ here at Dream Huge Realty?
Enjoying this bipolar weather in Ohio. Feeling outstanding.
If you don't like the weather in Ohio, wait 5 minutes and you will like it, basically. Yeah.
That's right.
And he's feeling outstanding. I love to hear that, Biggie. Yeah. Let me get to our special guest. Our special guest is Nathan Jensen, Nate Jensen. He is out of Utah. Thank you for joining us, Nate.
Yeah, you bet. Excited to be here.
Thank you, man. Yep, we're excited too. Nate uses accounting information to help businesses understand what's helping or hurting their profitability. So something tells me he's a little bit of a numbers guy. And we love the numbers. You know, it's all about data. We preach that. Yeah. Don't give your opinions without backing it up with data. Okay. And it's very easy to do in this business. You know, drawing this back to real estate. What's my house worth? What do you think I could sell it for? And they nudge you. Like, let me look at the data first before I jump to a response. And getting back to business. So much data-driven stuff in business. If you don't know your data, your business is not going to succeed. So you can find Nate Jensen at 02CFO.com. That is the name of his business. That's spelled out 0-0-T-O-C-F-O. I'm thinking that stands for Chief Financial Officer.
Correct. Yep.
.com. Okay. So, Nate, tell us a little bit about what you do, buddy.
So right now, my main focus is financial dashboards. You just mentioned the importance of data. Businesses, like every single business, has a ton of data, right? If you have any kind of bookkeeping system, you've got a lot of data in there. And as a fractional CFO, I spend a lot of time coaching and consulting with clients, helping them understand that data. And I eventually found that with a really good dashboard, people are able to kind of be connected directly to their data. They can see it instead of like in a table of numbers, they can see a picture, right? They see a graph trending up, trending down, hitting targets or not. And it's so much easier for them to understand what's going on and what needs to change. And so that's really where I'm at, is I'm building dashboards for clients so that they can have that insight into their own profit.
What type of clients do you typically work with?
Well, definitely smaller businesses. I would say anywhere from around 5 employees up to around 50 is kind of my sweet spot. I wish I could say it's a certain industry. I know we're supposed to target specific industries. I've targeted marketing companies. I've targeted construction companies. But honestly, so many businesses are very similar when it comes to just certain metrics they need to understand, right? At least within their industry. And so I do all kinds. I do restaurants. I do manufacturing. Everybody needs to understand what their numbers are telling them.
Yep. How would your services differ from, say, an accountant's? You're going to your normal accountant once a month and reviewing your financials.
So let me break it down for you how I like to think of it. I think of accountants in four categories. If they're internal, they're one of three. They're your bookkeeper, who they just like keep your records. They're your controller, who kind of runs your day-to-day stuff, that run your payroll, get your bills paid. And then there's your CFO, who's going to be more of a strategic partner, analytical, and so forth. And then the fourth one is your outside accountant, who's your CPA, who basically is going to do your taxes, right? If you're meeting with somebody each month who's going to look through your financial statements with you, that's somewhere between a controller and a CFO, and that's great. My main focus, in fact, one of my targets are those people. I am a fractional CFO, but I'm not actively pursuing new CFO clients. I'm pursuing clients who just need better insights. And so if someone has that fractional CFO or someone that they review their numbers with, I can build them a dashboard. And instead of that CFO taking, you know, an hour or two to like comb through the numbers for that month, they can benefit as well from saying, hey, here's a dashboard. I can very quickly see what numbers are we hitting and what are we not. And then I'm preparing my kind of plan of attack to address those instead of having to uncover them in the first place. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's all about, I'm going to build you that dashboard. I'm going to let you see exactly what's going on. And you can interpret it. Your financial person can interpret it. You know, whoever's there, but it's so much easier to see it if you have that tool in place.
Yes. Visibility on the data. Now, is for the record, is it data or data?
I usually say data, but I sometimes will say data. So
I'm not sure. That's why I ask. Yeah. What do you vote, Biggie?
Is it data or data? Data.
Yeah. I say data probably because of Star Trek. That's probably it.
Nice.
I think it's because it's easier to say.
Is it tomato or tomato?
Tomato.
Tomato, yeah.
Okay, that's an easy one. Yeah.
Hey, you know, the rapid fire round is later.
I like the dashboard idea. You know, yeah, the financials, when you start trying to break them down, and you may have, okay, I'm comparing this year versus last year or this month versus last month. You really need to have, like you said, the data. Well, the data is only good as the one putting it in to the system. So the data, yeah, has to be entered correctly and accounted for correctly. Yeah. But it is good to be able to, at a quick glance, see whether you're meeting those metrics. That's what it sounds like, that you help to set on those different things that you're looking for.
Yeah, there's a very simple process I go through when I'm setting up a client. Is we first determine what are the KPIs, what are the metrics that really matter. And if there's 500 you want to measure, we can do that. But there's really probably 3 to 5 that have the biggest impact, right? So we determine what are the biggest impact metrics. Second is we set a target for each metric. And then third, the dashboard's just going to measure our actual performance against that target. And so again, if you've got those 5, they're the most important, and you can see 3 of them you're doing great and 2 of them you're missing, that's going to tell you where you need to fix, right? Oh, we need to fix these 2 that are broken. Once we do that, all of our metrics are in line. We're going to be profitable like we think we should be.
So Biggie, this reminds me of Brad, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So
do you like Brad?
Yeah, no, we do. Brad's a killer. He does an amazing job of measuring. He has a dashboard. He knows where they're lacking, where they need to do more at a glance. He puts it on a big screen. You know, mm-hmm. You can easily see it. The whole business can easily see it. Biggie, you know a little bit more than I do about how he operates on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of, like you said, it's just it's a visual representation of the numbers with the charts and the colors. But I had a question. What kind of platform do you use for the dashboards?
So I use a couple different ones depending on the client need. For those clients that need a really robust analysis, I use Microsoft's Power BI. And I like that because I can take data from a lot of different sources. It's got a transformation tool that it can clean it up. It can, you know, kind of create model it how I need it set up. And then the visualizations are pretty easy. So. And they're very interactive, right? So a client can jump in there and they can click on, you know, show me the month, show me the client, show me the department, whatever. I want to see profitability by whatever object, by employee even. I have that in some cases. It lets people drill down to what's causing the issues. And the reason that's important is if you say, hey, our gross profit number is not where it should be, you know you need to focus on gross profit, but the only way to do that is to address those objects that affect it. So again, depending on your business, it might be profit by client, profit by location, profit by department, profit by sales channel, profit by employee, profit by whatever we figured out matters the most in your business.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Now you said that was for something robust. Is there something else?
So my basic one, I use a platform called Fathom.
Okay.
That does a very good financial statement level analysis. The way I kind of look at it is that first one tends to show you the data and generate some questions. And then the second one tends to answer those questions.
Okay. So do you kind of intertwine them?
Well, they don't talk to each other, if that's what you mean. But there's definitely a flow, right? Like, we're going to start out looking at the more basic one.
Yeah.
Because then that's going to say your area, your problem areas are here, here, and here. Then we're going to drill down and be like, so for example, construction companies, we track a metric called employee utilization, which just is, are people tracking their time and are they using enough of a percentage of their time, right? Are they working, let's say 75% or 80% of their clockable hours? If we go to that first dashboard and it's at 65%, we're then going to go to that second dashboard to see, okay, which employees are hitting that metric and which are not. And so out of, let's say 10 employees, maybe there's two or three that are taking that number down.
Gotcha.
And so then we can go address those specific employees with training or, you know, whatever the case may be.
Gotcha. So like the basic is kind of like the bird's eye view. And then you got to dive deep down on, say, like the particular street or department,
yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yep. Nice. Thank you.
Now, I don't want to bore your guests and talk about accounting and data the whole time. So if you want to get into mindset, I'm more than happy to change the subject.
No, I absolutely love it. You know, it's the most important thing in business. It's funny. Our it just reminds me of a few funny things from my accounting experience. I grew up in a family business, and dad would take me to the accountants every month with him, and I kind of learned the ins and outs of financials from that. And he had a funny saying, liars figure and figures lie. I said, well, again, that goes back to putting in the correct data and then you will get the correct output. Mm-hmm. Another reason why data is so important, it just reminded me of this same story going back to the old days. Our accountant used to tell us, man, you got to watch. You got to pay close attention to the data, to the financials, because you will go broke quickly. Before you even know it, your company can go out and go broke. It happens so quickly you couldn't even understand it. And he come from a place of experience, you know, dealing with all those clients over the years. He had seen it and been there. And the crazy thing was that he ended up actually going broke after he preached that to us for years. Wow. But those are just two funny things just that come to my mind.
I can add something here. When I build a dashboard, there's two things that it does we haven't talked about. One is it's going to give feedback to the bookkeeping process, right? I love looking at data visualizations, and having it say, you need to change this in your operations if you're going to improve profitability. But before we can get there, it's often saying, your bookkeeping is not sufficient. We need it tracked differently or more timely, or we need more detail or whatever it is. And it's only after we kind of correct that bookkeeping function, we've got to have the data coming in such a way that we can get it out to do the analysis that we need. And so for most of my clients, it's not that it's being done wrong necessarily. It's just, it needs to change a little bit to get the information that we need. And then the second thing that I haven't mentioned is that a forecast, in fact, a couple of forecasts, I think are a good part of every financial function. I like to do a P&L forecast so we can say, let's say 3 to 6 months out, are we still profitable? But I also like a cash forecast so I can say 8 to 12 weeks out, are we going to run out of money? Because if it's time to run payroll and you're out of money, you have no options, right? Hopefully have some cash stuffed away in like maybe a personal bank account you can access. But if you look 8 weeks ahead and you're like, oh no, in 8 weeks we're out of money, you have so many things you can do to make sure that doesn't happen. So you've got to be looking ahead and just making sure you're prepared for that.
Sure. That's a great point. Yeah. Because accountants oftentimes are recording the past, correct? Mm-hmm. That's their job.
Absolutely. But
it's important to look forward and anticipate that future. Yes.
Yeah. People hear the words accounting and finance, and it just sort of is one nebulous term. But I like to think of it as, yes, accounting is historic, finance is future. And I definitely like to use the historic numbers, but more to plan and predict for the future.
Yeah, and I think for us small business owners out there, you really have to embrace it, because it's one of those things, like you said, it's boring and whatnot. You'll hear it all the time. Small business owners, well, I'm good at my business, but oh, screw those books and that paperwork. I don't mess with that stuff. You should be.
Yeah.
Okay? You need to be good, at least somewhat good at all those parts.
Mm-hmm.
Or willing to partner with people like yourself, Nate, who are excellent at some of those parts. But you cannot discount the importance of it. And don't brush it off to the side.
Yeah, well, I think, like, I see business owners who are amazing at their visionary, or they're amazing at building their product or connecting with their customer or whatever it is that they do that kind of got them into that business in the first place. But unless you're in a business like mine, you didn't get into your business because of the accounting, right? That was not something that drew you in.
Right.
And so that's what I hope to do, is to, again, using a dashboard and pictures, connect those kinds of people who are great at whatever it is they do, but connect them with their data in such a way that they can look at it and they're not like having to re-understand it every month and relearn it. They can just see the bar graph, or they can see the pie chart, or they can, you know, see whatever and be like, oh, it's right there. I know what it is. And now I can make a decision and move forward.
Yep.
Because they're not trained in it. They don't like it. And yes, they should learn some about it, but if we're honest, they're never going to really, you know, fully embrace it. So I'm doing what I can to make it, you know, a little easier to understand what's going on in the business.
Yeah, I like that, because I took a class about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, on understanding charts and data. It was just a friend who's teaching me kind of like how to understand charts so he could day trade. Mm-hmm. But I didn't do much. I did it like on paper, so I didn't actually do any real trades. But he taught me how to look at data and look at charts and the fluctuation of it, and just the concepts of, you know, what volume is. And it allowed me to see charts. Like, now I love looking at charts. Like, I can see the bottom, see the top. Is this going to repeat? Is this the future? And like you said, you have a new relationship with data.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me give an example. I've got a restaurant client who he's actually an immigrant, has a very unique sort of restaurant, doesn't know the first thing about accounting. He knows he needs a bookkeeper, needs an accountant. And so when we set up his metrics, a couple of things we looked at were stuff like how many times he turns his tables over in a month. Okay, so really the total number of tickets, that kind of thing. And then profit per ticket. And in the first month, we were able to see that, hey, if you can, his average ticket was something like $50, right in that range. And we figured out, hey, if you can raise that by $2.50, you'll make another $10,000 a month. And that's like you sell one more drink per table, right? Or an appetizer every couple of tables.
Right.
And when he realized that, he was like, well, at first he was like, how do I do that? Like, well, train your wait staff, right? Have them, don't just have them take orders, but have them recommend a drink or an appetizer or whatever. And very quickly, he started to see his business change, like very quickly, like the next month, he was making a lot more money. And so, yeah, if you take the time to just learn, again, those few key metrics that really matter, and what your target is, and how close are you to that target, it's very easy to flip your whole business to profitability or extreme profitability. So, yeah, it's reading the graphs. It really is.
It Fantastic. Reminds me of, you know, it's the compound effect. But it reminds me of, you know, there's a book called The Slight Edge. And it essentially teaches the philosophy of just 1%. And sometimes it's just that one little thing. But you do it compoundedly every single day. Like you said, it's just one more drink. That's just one more little percent thing to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, over 250 tables, that's a lot more money.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
The metrics in the dashboard is zerotocfo.com. My man Nate Jensen in the house today. All right, Nate, so let's get into a little bit of the mindset.
Yeah.
Where did you come from, and how did you end up where you are today?
All right, that's a great story. I'll try not to take too much time with it. When I was in my early 20s, 20, let's say 22, 23, I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And so I quit my job and I started a window cleaning business. And it did not go well. I started to make a little money, but it seemed I always had employee problems. I actually had, ironically, I had some accounting problems. I was not an accountant at the time. And after a couple of years of doing that, I actually went out of business. I just couldn't do it anymore. I was just tired. I would occasionally take on some debt to make payroll. And when I closed my doors, I was underwater about 35 grand, which at the age of 20, again, probably 24 years old, like I was devastated. I knew in my heart I was never going to recover, right? I was never going to get out of that. And of course I did, but at the time, that's how it felt. Went back, got a job, have a family at this point, right? Now I have four kids. I think I had three at the time. Started another business, did not go well again. And I was upside down about the same amount. So I'm like 70 grand in the hole at this point, thinking, boy, am I ever going to figure this out? And I'm back working a job. And in fact, I graduated college and got fired from a sales job because I just wasn't good at it. And my father-in-law came to me and he said, he owned a business and he said, do you know how to use QuickBooks? And I was like, yeah, a little bit, kind of. And he's like, do you want to come keep my books part-time? Because he knew I was just struggling just to make ends meet, right? I was just, you know, for the first, seriously, like 10 years of my marriage, professionally, financially, I was not getting it. I was not figuring it out. But anyway, so I started keeping books for him. As long as I was doing it part-time for him, I went and started keeping books part-time for somebody else. And that guy realized I didn't know what I was doing in accounting. And he said, if you want to go take a class at the community college, I'll pay for it. So I went and I took cost accounting and I was amazed. I was one of those guys who was like, accounting is boring. I just accepted that, had no interest in it, right? But in cost accounting, that's where I really started to learn that with that data, you can understand profitability in the sense of which customers, which products, which locations, whatever, are profitable, and you can actually make decisions. And so when I learned that, I ate it up and I went and I got a CMA, Certified Management Accountant designation, went back and actually got a master's in forensic accounting, and I'm growing. I happen to be freelancing kind of as a bookkeeper, right? And eventually just quit any kind of real job and just kept freelancing, picked up client after client. Sold that business in 2015 and happy to say that it covered at least the losses on my first two businesses and then some, which was a turning point for me, right?
That's good.
Can imagine how that changed my mindset. Soon after that, I started another business, which was bookkeeping controller and CFO. And did that until just a couple of years ago, and then I sold that one. And so it's been, I'm nearing 50, I'm 47. So from the time, I guess that, was that like 25 years?
Yeah.
20, I'm going to say 20 years, it's closer to 20 years. you know, from first business to current. And it's so amazing because now if I have a down month or a down year even, it's like, eh. I know I can figure it out. I've done it before. I know there's principles and stuff. I just keep, you know, following those principles that work and I'll get there. I will tell you though, it's so hard in those early days when you have a big failure and you feel like it must just be me. There's, you know, other people that are meant to succeed or they're smart enough to succeed. For some reason, I just couldn't. It's hard to get out of that. So, you know, you really, that self-talk, you really start to believe that you don't deserve it, that you don't belong there, that you're just not meant to have that. And for me, just somewhere deep, I sort of felt that, I really knew even deeper down that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to build a business. I wanted to build an asset. And I didn't ever expect it to be an accounting business, but now I've done a couple of those and I'm on my third. So I guess that's what I know how to do. And it's been an amazing ride and it's been really hard, but I look at news stories or posts on different websites where people are complaining about their job or how much money they make. And I'm like, dude, don't ever come at me and feel like I make too much money, because I don't know, because I'm a business owner or whatever. I'm like, I've paid the price. Believe me, I've paid to be where I'm at.
Yeah.
And there's the pain of going to work every day for somebody else. And there's the pain of doing it for yourself and taking all the risk. And that's the path I took. And I'm not at all apologetic for being successful when I've been through all that. Because I've been through, again, two businesses that I failed really hard and really set me back. But that's where I paid my dues. That's how I got here.
I love it. I love how you talked about what I took a couple notes. The, you know, you went through that and then you've made it out the other side. And like you say, oh, I might have a down month. You're like, you know, it's fine. I can do this. And like you said, the self-talk, it's a positive reassurance to yourself. Like, hey, I've done this before. I can do it again. Instead of having that negative, oh man, woe is me, I'm not going to do it again. No, you've already done this before. Let's go do it, man. Let's go do it again. Hey, down month, that's fine. Let's attack instead of living.
Yeah, look, nobody's immune, right? Like, again, I've had two successful businesses and I'm on my third. And just recently, I could not seem to get in front of the right clients, right, or the right people to become clients. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong? And yeah, I have those emotionally down moments, right? Where I'm like, I just feel like I'm smarter than this, right? Why is it not working? It's not coming together. But it's the persistence, honestly. And if you stick with it, it turns around. And you've got to be careful, because when you get in that negative headspace, you've got to see it for what it is and just accept, hey, I'm going to feel down today. If I'm having a bad day, it's fine. But tomorrow I'm going to get up and I'm going to keep doing my thing and it's going to work out. Because I actually am really good at what I do.
Yeah.
I just have to find a better way to communicate with people about that.
Right.
If you get in that space and you just let it kind of take you down and down and down, and it starts affecting your behavior. So instead of coming to my desk in the morning, which is in my home, and getting to work, if I just go in the living room and watch TV or something, that's when it becomes a problem. Right.
Right.
Totally okay to have a bad day, but you've got to keep at it. You've got to pick yourself up at some point and just keep moving forward.
Exactly. Yep. That's I'm sure a lot of people have read the book Atomic Habits. And if you should, I mean, right up your lane, you're just
well, I have not.
About that book. But there's a story he tells in there about Jerry Seinfeld. Shares his story of how he rose to maintain his discipline and just keep going. And he developed this concept called Don't Break the Chain. And what it was he had a goal of writing out jokes. It didn't matter how bad the jokes were. He made a disciplined aspect. I'm going to write a joke today. I'm going to write a joke today. And he would do it over and over again, one after one. It became more, and he got better and better and better. The concept was don't break the chain, because if you take a little break, like too long of a break, like if you took 2 days off, it would just kind of like all the momentum goes away.
Yeah.
And I use that in my own personal life from going to the gym. I take one day off. That's it.
So that's the most you take off, you say?
Yeah. So I'll do like maybe 2-3 on. But if I take a break, like, for example, I took a break today, I have to go tomorrow.
Got it.
So, yeah. But you said don't break the chain.
What?
You just said don't break the chain, though. You can't take a break.
I'm not breaking the chain, because the rule is you can't miss two.
I know. I'm just messing with you. I love it. No, you've got you're disciplined. You've got your system in place. You're following it. And whether you're having an up day or a down day, or you're feeling good or you're feeling bad, you're holding yourself accountable to stay to that system.
Exactly.
So that's what it takes. And that's why Nate did the same. And that's why Nate had two failed businesses and then went on to have two and now three successful businesses, because he stayed the course even on those down days. And what's crazy too, and I find this a lot in business, is often the opportunities are right in front of your face, right? You never would have thought about using accounting as a business. And there it was. And it was presented to you and you took it and ran with it, right?
Yeah. Well, let me talk to that. And I got another example for you. My daughter, she's 23 and she's a yoga instructor. She loves yoga. It's kind of like she thinks about it all the time. That's all she wants to do. And she wants to start her own yoga business. She doesn't want to teach for someone else. And so She reserved a studio for an hour to kind of see what she could drum up. Did a little marketing on, you know, Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that. And she went over and nobody showed up. Like, nobody came. She was very frustrated. And I said, look, you love yoga. That's all you want to do is yoga. But you've got to understand that people out there, they don't think about yoga the way you do, right? To you, it's like a spiritual journey and an awakening. And to them, most people think of it as maybe stretching or exercise or whatever. But they certainly don't prioritize it like you do. And we had a lengthy talk about, just because you love yoga doesn't mean you're going to build a business and people are going to come because they love yoga too. There might be a market out there where you can find those people who do love it. But just because you love it doesn't mean it's just going to happen. You've got to look at what's really demanded in the marketplace. And so for me, accounting was demanded. I had a knack for it, and I just went with it. Again, not because I had planned to, not because I was in love with it. It's because I needed to put food on the table, honestly, at the time, right? Let me give you, if you remember the film, the Field of Dreams, they build a baseball field out in the corn, right? And the whisper that comes through the corn stalks is, if you build it, they will come. I think it's a great film, but I think too many people kind of are inspired by that notion that, hey, if I just believe enough, it'll just happen, right? I can tell you, if you go build a baseball field out in the cornfields, people aren't just going to drive up in droves. If that's your thing, you've got to market it. You've got to have a reason that that customer base is going to show up, and you've got to understand that. And I think your mindset, you have to be resilient, right? Because you're gonna start something that maybe you love, or maybe you just hope you can be super successful at it, and you will be disappointed. Nothing ever starts as fast as you want it to. You're not gonna, you know, we tend to think we're gonna start a business, we're gonna hang out the sign, and people will just come in droves saying, finally, there's a store that sells this thing that I wanted. That's not how it works, right? You've gotta understand your market, you've gotta understand why they're gonna buy, you gotta understand what they're gonna pay. And you have to use all these principles of business, right, to make this thing happen. It's not just because you have a belief and you have a dream and you have a love that it comes together. And so I think there has to be this marriage between that belief and that vision and the data on the other hand, right? If you believe in it, great. That's a great place to start. But again, like my daughter, she loves yoga so much. She thought that if she just had this one, you know, an open night kind of people to come, that they would just show up. Everybody would show up because she didn't understand her market. And so if you hit a disappointment like that, and you will, you've got to say, okay, what's next? Do I pivot, or was the idea good and the marketing was bad? And you got to think through it. But it's that mindset to stay resilient, stick with it, and continue. And if you have to pivot like I did, pivot. But maybe you don't. Maybe, again, your idea is good and you just went about it the wrong way. But you will be disappointed in the beginning. And if you accept that, then it's much easier to keep going. And I went on a really far tangent here. I don't remember how I got here.
No, it's really good. It reminds me of another quote. Inch by inch, life's a cinch. Yard by yard, life is hard. And that's the thing. I mean, you just got to keep building those bricks, inch by inch, day by day. Maybe yoga still is the thing for her. Mm-hmm. But one open night is not going to be the be-all, end-all.
Yeah.
That's gives you your feedback. Okay, well, like you said, either I got to crank up the marketing, which is what I would hope that she does, because it sounds to me like she loves yoga. If you're obsessed with something, man, I love being obsessed about something, because that's something I can really succeed at. But now there needs to be a little more of a game plan and more and a notion that this may take a year to build up.
Oh yeah. Oh, I believe it. We've had those conversations.
Oh, for sure. And and the viewers too. Yeah. Yeah. But so what is her mindset? Just curious. Is she want to stick with it?
She does, but she kind of goes back and forth, right? She's like, oh, and it's funny because I saw myself go through this same thing, you know, at about her age, is you believe so hard in the one thing and then it absolutely falls flat on its face. It's so easy to say, oh, let me try this other thing. That's the real idea. That's the idea I should have had first. And you go two steps down that path and you fall on your face. And you're like, oh, I should have done this other thing. And then three or four down the road, you go back to the first one. And it's like, no, there's not an easy way. If you're going to be in business for yourself, there's not an easy way to do it. You know, if you, again, sometimes it makes sense to pivot and you've got to be honest about that. But sometimes you just didn't try hard enough. And you got to be honest about that too.
There is nothing easy in this life. Nothing worth having, at least. Yeah. All right. Are you ready for the, ooh, yeah, baby, it's time for the huge four questions. Are you ready, Nate, to hit you? We're going to hit you with the huge four.
I'm so ready.
Okay. What's the one thing you wish you would have known when you began your career, Nate?
I wish I would have known more about accounting, actually. My part of the reason my first business went under was my AR got really messed up by someone that I had hired. And so I tried to collect money and people would say, we already paid that. We don't owe that anymore. We already paid it. And my books were just a mess. So yeah, I wish I knew more about accounting.
Kind of ironic.
Isn't it?
Yep. Go ahead, Biggie.
Yeah, number two, what was your biggest failure and what did you learn from it?
Biggest failure easily was that first business. And what I learned was it wasn't about how smart I was, because I remember starting and thinking, I'm smarter than most people. I can make this work, right?
Right.
I arrogantly still think I'm a pretty smart guy.
That's confidence.
But it wasn't, it's confidence, right? But I didn't fail because I wasn't smart enough. I failed because I didn't have specific knowledge that I needed and I didn't have that stick-to-itiveness, right? A simple example, if I understood a simple break-even principle that I know now, I could have looked at my window cleaning business and said, I need this much per month to break even. I had no concept at that young age and at that level of inexperience, how to even calculate that or that it was even a thing. And so it was just sort of this blind cloud out there that I had no idea what I needed to do to be successful, except just work harder, right? And so having that specific knowledge would have helped me stick to it long and be like, Nate, you're this close. All you got to do is like go this much farther and you're there. But because I couldn't see it, it may as well have been 1,000 miles away. I had no idea.
Love it.
What are the best resources that have helped you along the way?
Education, honestly. Part of that is because of the nature of my business, right? I had to get more accounting education. But some of that came through certification. Some of that came through college and, like I said, a master's degree. Some of it came through just timely advice from certain people. I still remember when I was more of a bookkeeper and controller still than a CFO, someone said something to me that was so profound. He said, Nate, a number by itself doesn't mean anything. Right? You could say, hey, we made $10,000 this month. But if your regular's 100,000, you did terrible. And if your regular's 1,000, you did amazing. Right? So just a number by itself is useless. You got to know what it should be or what it used to be. And that really sort of started me down the path of strategy, really, you know, dashboards and understanding profitability. And so education that's formal is fantastic, but education wherever you can get it is a good thing.
Well, that spiles right into the next question. What are two books that have inspired your success?
I'll give you two. One was Cashflow Quadrant, which is a Rich Dad series book.
Yep.
And the understanding of the importance of cash flow, right? It's not about, like, assets are great and assets are important, but you have to have cash flow. And then the second one is The 4-Hour Work Week, which, honestly, I built my first business on the principles of that book. When I was a bookkeeper, I really grabbed hold of the 80-20 rule and Parkinson's Law. And yeah, do you know what Parkinson's Law is?
No.
Parkinson's Law.
I guess just tell us for the guest.
Okay. Parkinson's Law is basically like, if you shorten the amount of time you have to do a specific task, you'll figure out a way to get the task done in that time. Okay. And so as an example, I remember bringing on a client who he had a part-time bookkeeper, so 20 hours a week, who was leaving for some reason, and he hired me to replace her. And I said, I'll come in and do the work, but I can't like sit in your office all day. I have other clients. So if I can just come in and get the work done and be gone, then I'd love to work together. And he said, that's just fine. And I gave myself basically one morning per week to do that job. And most weeks I'd have it done in about 3 hours and I was on to the next client. And so the ability to take a 20-hour job down to a 3-hour job, I was able to get quite a few clients just because I was efficient. And part of my efficiency came from saying, I've only got this much time. I got to figure out a way to get it done in that amount of time. So anyway, I learned that in the 4-hour work week. So
I love it. It's just discipline. That's all it is.
Focus.
Well, discipline, but with a specific goal, right? Like
yes.
I could have gone in saying, hey, you've got 20 hours to do this. And I'd be very disciplined for those 20 hours.
Right.
But I said, I've got to do this morning because I have other clients I got to get to this afternoon. I don't have 20 hours.
So. Yeah. I guess it would be an application of discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very specific.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're going to have some fun. Are you ready for the rapid fire round, Nate?
I thought we were having fun already, but let's go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. So we're going to have some more fun.
Yes. Okay.
All right. Right off the top of your head, Nate, come to me. The first thing that pops into your mind, what is your spirit animal?
A wolf. I don't know why.
It's fine.
Okay.
What's your favorite movie?
The Truman Show.
Oh, nice. Jim Carrey, right?
Yeah. That was actually, it came out when I was starting my business, my first one. And it was like, everybody was trying to get him to conform in this world that he lived in and believe in it. And I was so determined to break out of like traditional job, traditional path kind of thing that I just connected to that idea of him breaking out.
Nice. That was the movie of your life. Jim Carrey, played by Nate Jensen. Vice versa.
Vice versa, probably.
What is your favorite food?
Chocolate ice cream.
There we go.
What do you do in your spare time?
If I have a lot of spare time, I travel internationally.
Nice.
Yeah.
Where do you like to go?
Oh, everywhere. I went to Brazil in November. I took my son to Tokyo in last April. Been to Paris and London and Indonesia, Thailand. I just like everywhere that's foreign because it's interesting.
Incredible. I can't wait to do that.
Fun stuff.
Just love Mansfield, Ohio so much. I'm satisfied here, Biggie.
Do I need to add it to my bucket list? Because it's not on it yet.
You should. You should. All your Utah friends are coming out here.
Are they?
Yeah.
They haven't mentioned it to me, but I'll ask them.
Yeah, no, it's a great city here. No, that's amazing that you get to travel like that. And that's being an entrepreneur, right? So that's hopefully one of the perks. A true entrepreneur does that and does it well. Many entrepreneurs are guilty of having the business own them instead of them owning the business, right?
Yeah.
So kudos to you.
And it did help that I sold my business, right? That's part of why I had the time to be able to do that.
Right. Biggie, I'm selling the business. Sorry.
Hey, I talked to you about this like 2 years ago.
I want to travel with Nate.
Let's go. Call me.
All right. No, I have no plans to sell, unfortunately. I just we'll just keep growing and I'll just travel on the side, I guess. Biggie, you're up.
Are you sure?
Or no, it's me. If you could have dinner with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh boy. Honestly, I'd have to say Jesus. I'm a Christian and I don't know if I could handle it, honestly, but that'd be the one I'd pick.
Hey, that's a good choice. Bread.
What? Yeah.
You'll be breaking bread.
Breaking bread, yes.
What's your go-to karaoke song?
Oh.
Anything from a musical, like anything from Les Mis or Wicked, something like that.
Nice.
Not much into pop music myself.
Are you going to give us a little sample?
No, I'm not. I did sing last December. I sang in The Messiah. I had a solo. So it was a one-time, once-in-a-lifetime thing for me. I'm not much of a singer, but it was cool to be up and do a solo.
It is cool. It's awesome. What is something you fear besides singing a solo?
Besides singing a solo? It's a fear that sometimes gets realized, actually, is just being alone, like loneliness. Like, I'm married, I have kids, I have family. But an entrepreneur's life often is lonely. People don't get you unless you're part of a good networking group of similar people. And so I work out of my house, deal with clients, and then when I'm done, sometimes I'm just like, I can go talk to my wife, but she doesn't relate on the same level, you know? And so sometimes I feel like I have stuff to share and can't connect with someone that would understand.
Yeah. I feel you. Hey,
if you're ever feeling alone, Nate, these two entrepreneurs right here, you reach out to us, buddy.
All right. You got it, Pete.
And hopefully you do the same for us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Finally, last one. What is your greatest accomplishment?
Oh, man. It's because I've done so many amazing things. I can't pick one. No, just kidding. Honestly, I have to say my family. Just, again, married and four kids. We all have a good relationship. Trust each other, love each other. And to build something like that over 24 years, I think my oldest is 24. I've been married for over 25. It's like the achievement of a lifetime. How could I do anything more than that?
That's it. That is a tremendous accomplishment. Thank you for joining us, Nate Jensen. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Final thoughts, Biggie? Final thoughts, Nate?
My final thought would be just know who you are, where you want to go, and just keep at it. Keep at it.
That's exactly right.
Final thoughts? I just like this. It's very calm and insightful. Yeah, we went from data to mindset, so I loved it all. Oh, yeah. And then Mark said, dream huge.
That's right. Let me take you out with the outro. Thank you for listening to and watching the Dream Huge podcast. Please remember to like, subscribe, and share. Also, Nate Jensen, where can folks find you or follow you?
Best place is my website, zerotocfo.com. There's a contact form on there if you want to reach out.
Excellent. There you go. Thank you again, Nate Jensen. Thank you, Justin Bigelow, myself, Pete Peterson. Please like, subscribe, and share. And as always, remember the rules. Work hard, never give up, and dream huge. Let's see the guns, Nate. There we go, baby. Thank you. Thank you very much, guys. Y'all have a great day. Thank you, listeners and viewers.
Thank you for listening to the Dream Huge podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. For more inspiring content, follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Dream Huge Realty and on TikTok at Dream Huge Inc. Until next time.